With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The biggest loss in American agriculture is occurring in the middle as commercial family farms steadily disappear. USDA data show nearly 79% of farms generate under 100,000 in annual sales, yet control only about a quarter of farmland. And at the same time, farms selling more than $1 million of products represent just over 6% of operations, but manage about 36% of all ag land. So that leaves mid-sized farms, historically, backbones of rural communities squeezed between scale efficiency and limited access to capital. It's these operations that are often too large to rely on off-farm income, but yet too small to capture the purchasing and marketing advantages of larger competitors. So as a result, many mid-tier producers either expand significantly or exit entirely. Shift affects local equipment dealers, lenders, and service providers traditionally depended on a wide base of independent commercial farms. Now, the data reinforces economists' concerns that the rural economy is losing its broad commercial producer base rather than that agriculture itself is shrinking. A proposed $85 billion merger between Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern could significantly alter rail competition, shipping cost, and service reliability for ag shippers if approved by federal regulators. Surface Transportation Board is actually reviewing the deal, which would create the nation's first coast-to-coast freight railroad. Supporters argue that the combined network would streamline long-distance grain movements, especially shipments from the Midwest to southeastern feed and milling markets, by reducing interchange delays at hubs like Chicago, St. Louis, Memphis, and New Orleans. Now, the companies project $4.2 billion in new revenue, $1 billion in annual cost savings, and diversion of more than 2 million truckloads per year to rail. But opponents, including competing railroads and shippers groups, warn that the merged carrier could control more than 40% of U.S. rail traffic, reducing competition and raising freight rates. They also cite risk of service disruption similar to consolidation problems during the 1990s rail mergers, which affected ag shipments. Softer U.S. dollar is improving export competitiveness for American crops. It's offering potential price support without requiring lower farm gate bids. That's according to economists with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. And because most global ag commodities are priced in dollars, exchange rates directly affect foreign buying power. So when the dollar weakens, overseas buyers can purchase more U.S. grain and fiber using their local currency. It often strengthens export demand and supporting domestic prices. Opposite, though, occurs during a strong dollar environment, which tends to slow export movement and pressure bids. Farmers preparing for spring planting facing another year of tight margins as large carryover stocks expected to outweigh solid production potential. That's according to an outlook from Terrain economists. They say large carryover stocks will limit the upside despite solid yields. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our grain storage capacity has stopped growing.
University of Illinois ag economist Joe Jansen on U.S. grain storage capacity.
Storage infrastructure, think of the bins, elevators, and sheds used to keep grain in good marketable condition, is an important part of the U.S. grain supply chain. It helps facilitate efficient, low-cost movement of commodities from producer to end user, helping to ensure that farmers receive the best price for their crops. In a recent article for FarmDocDaily, I examined trends in grain storage capacity, production, and stocks using data from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. I look at off-farm storage, that's commercial elevators and terminals, and on-farm storage, the bins on farmers' properties, in four regions where most of the grain production and storage capacity exists: the Eastern Corn Belt, Western Corn Belt, Northern Great Plains, and Southern Plains. There's a few observations. Some of the regions have more storage than others, and the mix of on-farm and off-farm storage varies. There's more storage capacity in the Corn Belt, where big corn yields generate a greater volume of grain. More than 13.5 billion bushels of capacity lie in the states between Ohio and Nebraska. The Western Corn Belt and Northern Great Plains, regions generally farther from ports and end users, have proportionally more storage on farm. Farmers in those areas typically need to store grain for longer. Most relevant to our discussion is that after 2020, capacity growth has slowed across all regions and all facility types. This is a nationwide pattern affecting both farmers and commercial grain handlers. So what happens when capacity growth slows while production continues to increase? Farmers and others use existing storage capacity more intensively. I calculate a measure of capacity utilization, the proportion of storage capacity being used to hold grain inventories, on the four quarterly dates assessed by USDA, December 1st, March 1st, June 1st, and September 1st. Storage use follows the marketing year for corn and soybeans, the biggest crops in the U.S. December is right after harvest, so storage utilization is highest then. By the following September, just before the next corn and soybean harvest, utilization has declined as grain moves to end users. While storage use varies from year to year with changes in crop size, the longer-run trend is towards greater capacity utilization. Comparing December storage capacity use across four subperiods, I find for the 1988 to 2005 period, average post-harvest utilization was about 60%. Since 2014, it's been closer to 70%. In the past 5 years, U.S. farmers have been using their space more intensively, filling their bins more and drawing them down to lower levels. December capacity utilization was roughly 70% on-farm compared to just over 60% off-farm. The most recent data suggests this trend has continued. As of December 1st, 2025, farmers held large inventories relative to storage capacity, with a capacity utilization rate of 80% on-farm compared to 65% off-farm. Why does this matter? Storage capacity is infrastructure that facilitates grain movement through the supply chain. When utilization rates increase, there's less flexibility in the system. We've seen in other contexts, like the Mississippi River transportation constraints of a few years ago, how infrastructure limitations can affect local prices and farmer marketing options. At current utilization levels, it's worth asking whether we're approaching a point where the capacity constraints could affect market function, particularly in specific locations with higher storage utilization rates. This analysis raises several questions worth considering. First, at what level of utilization might capacity constraints begin to affect supply chain efficiency and price relationships? And second, what factors are driving farmers and grain handlers' recent decisions about investment in grain storage? Understanding why capacity growth has slowed could help us anticipate future trends. In the article, I offer some hypotheses, but the answer is not clear, and so these are questions that farmers and others in the grain industry must continue to examine.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Milk prices began falling at the end of 2025, and will this be the beginning of a drawn-out lull in prices, or will low prices be the cure for low prices and lead to a rebound later in the year?
Ben Lane is a dairy economist with Terrain.
There's reason to hope that milk prices will improve in the next few months, but it will depend on how quickly the market can resolve a surplus of milk. Milk production has been growing dramatically in the U.S., up 4.5% year-over-year in November, and above 3% each month since June, as well as abroad in the EU and New Zealand. When the world is awash in milk, lower prices are hard to avoid. For years, U.S. milk supply was steady, with flat year-over-year volumes. Meanwhile, components continued to climb within that same volume of milk. Now, both milk volume and components are rising because of a milk cow herd that's the biggest in decades, and today's cows are yielding much higher milk output with record levels of components in that milk. Exports usually help absorb extra milk supply in the U.S., and they have been strong, especially for cheese and butter. But when the EU boosted milk production, global competition intensified. In commodity markets, competition can result in a race to the bottom on price. U.S. products are still moving overseas, but at much lower prices. Butter markets fell first. In my previous contribution to this column in April, I suggested that fat could come under pressure later in the year because of surplus cream on the market. After some hopeful signs that I might be wrong in late spring, the spot price of butter fell from $2.60 per pound at the beginning of July to around $2 per pound by early September and $1.40 per pound by the end of the year. The price of cheese followed. After bouncing within a range of $1.60 to $1.90 since late 2024, the spot price for block cheddar cheese ended 2025 near $1.35. The cause was similar in both cases. There was ample supply of butter because churns were full of oversupplied cheap cream. There was plenty of cheese because of expanded manufacturing capacity and a growing supply of milk. Both were supported as long as exports could remain strong. Once global prices fell, first for butter and later for cheese, the U.S. price needed to fall to keep product moving overseas. Non-fat dry milk has given up some of its gains earlier in the year, but to a less dramatic degree than cheese or butter. Whey, meanwhile, has been the bright spot given strong domestic demand for protein. Still, putting this all together, the impact on milk prices is decidedly negative. The all-milk price in October was reported at $20, down more than 20% from last October. That's despite the fat content being 2% higher this year. Traditionally, falling prices squeeze margins until production slows. This time, the adjustment may take longer for two reasons. First, a beef revenue cushion. I calculate dairy beef cross-calves, and elevated cull values add $3 to $4 per hundredweight in milk equivalent income for many producers. Second, risk management coverage. Some producers locked in favorable margins for late 2025 and early 2026 through dairy revenue protection or other hedging tools, muting market signals. Still, a 20% price drop is hard to ignore. Slaughter volumes are already trending higher, up 3% year-over-year on a weekly basis since September, signaling that producers are responding. To the extent that we do see some contraction in the milk cow herd, rebuilding won't be quick. The U.S. herd has skewed older, with cows sticking around for an additional lactation, and the supply of replacement heifers is still tight. So, a sudden contraction could take some time to rebuild, which would be positive for prices. The previous peak in cow numbers in recent history was May 2021 at 9.509 million head. By January 2022, the herd was 141,000 head smaller. It took more than 4 years and some elevated prices to get back to that previous high. Even if supply tightens, global prices will continue to influence U.S. markets. Domestic demand offers some upside longer term, but dairy consumption is sensitive to economic conditions. Rising unemployment could weigh on food service sales, a key channel for dairy. Low milk prices will be painful in the near term, but they could set the stage for a more balanced market later in the year.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's a lot of reports, a lot of rumors, like everything is in the fertilizer marketplace, but it does sound like after 2 months offline, their nitrogen production is set to recover back to full rates.
Josh Linville is Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX, talks Iran.
This has been a major thing that we've been watching, right? When you look at Iran, a lot of the world likes to look at them and say, well, they don't matter. We can't do business with them. They're sanctioned, they're tariffed, whatever the terms are, whatever economic blockade is in place, we can't do business with them, so they must not matter. They are the third largest urea exporter in the world as of 2024 data. They're one of the top 10 global anhydrous exporters. So they absolutely matter to the S&D. So if we can get their production back online, this can start to take away a little bit of this bullish slant that we've seen. But again, we do have to be kind of cognizant. They can come online, it can go back off just as quick as they started up. That U.S.-Iran tension is still a very, very big deal in that area.
So what about current prices?
For a quick backstory, one of the things we do, we're going to focus on the flat price, right? We always want higher grain prices. We want lower fertilizer prices. That's always the correct answer. But we look at it from a little bit different. We like to sit there and say, well, the value is between those two. And essentially what we do is look at the relationship and say, well, corn in this example, does it take to pay for a ton of urea? And then we look at that data over the years and you start to figure out, well, regardless of the high grain price, low grain price, whatever, a high value is worse because that farmer is spending far more bushels to pay for the input. We are leading into spring. And now this is not all time highs. This is for this time of year, but urea, UAN, anhydrous, phosphate, all of them are setting at the second worst ratio value that we've ever seen for this, you know, middle part of February. The only major fertilizer that isn't, that's well priced, remains potash. And it literally couldn't be much more average if it tried. It is, you know, you take all the weekly data going back to 2018 and it is dead set right in the 50 percentile range. It's right in the middle. But yeah, it's as farmers are looking to spring of 2026, I just about messed it up and said 2026. It is a very high price proposition. And the farmers are feeling it. The farmers are talking about it. This is nothing new. It just puts it in terms more people can start to understand.
We talked about Iran earlier. What about China?
Yeah, so the expectation, let's go ahead and roll out with this is what we expect today. And what we expect today is that they will not be exporting any phosphate or urea until August of 2026. That is what they've stated. That is what's been rumored and that's what's been talked about. And again, when we talk about that, they export normally 5 to 5.5 million tons of urea. They're a top five exporter. They are the world's largest phosphate exporter, 8 to 10 million tons per year. So if they are absent January until July, that is a massive, massive supply hole that's in the marketplace. Uh-huh. But with the New Year's going on, they're celebrating, they're having fun, they're doing all the things that everybody else likes to do when it comes to a holiday. When they come back, we will be watching for signs that they start to ease that export restriction, which we've seen before. There is no hard set rule that just because they said they won't export again until August, that that's absolutely what they will adhere to. If they come back from the celebration and say, okay, let's take a fresh look at things like we've done before. Urea stockpiles are okay and production levels are good. Phosphate stockpiles and industrial demand hasn't been what we thought it was going to be. If they look at that data and decide we're doing okay, they could very easily repeal that export ban until August and they can pull that up. And if they do that, we're going to be watching for prices to fall around the world. Low probability. Let's not get our hopes up too much because fertilizer likes to cut our knees out from under us. But that is something that could help correct the global markets very, very quickly.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
The early signs of financial stress on farms don't show up in bankruptcies. They show up in unpaid operating loans, decreases in working capital, and how much financial pressure gets carried from one year to the next.
Director for the Center for Commercial Agriculture at Purdue, Dr. Michael Langemeyer.
To capture this, we developed a simple index of financial stress. Essentially, what we're doing here is we're multiplying the percent that say we have larger operating loans by the percent that say that the reason that they have larger operating loans is carryover debt. The index reached its highest level in our data series in 2026. We've been tracking this since 2020. This does not signal a crisis necessarily, but it does indicate that financial stress is increasing at the margin. We also asked producers whether they believe they have a strong balance sheet. We've been asking this on and off for several years. 90% agreed or strongly agreed that they had a strong balance sheet. In the spring of 23, obviously a very high number. More recently, that number has declined. In January 26, 75% agreed or strongly agreed that they had a strong balance sheet. The fact that the balance sheet remains relatively strong is reducing financial stress, but it certainly doesn't help solve the problem associated with negative cash flows. The equity positions remain solid for many farms. That's what we found from the recent results related to the strength of the balance sheet. But some of the financial cushion built during stronger income years has been drawn down. We do not make a distinction between liquidity and solvency on balance sheets. I think solvency is more solid than liquidity. We've seen liquidity reduced, specifically a reduction in the current ratio in the last few years. For corn, soybean, and livestock producers, this matters because financial pressure typically shows up in working capital and liquidity first, not in land values or equity. When that cushion gets thinner, operations become more sensitive to price swings, yield shocks, and cost surprises. These trends are a good reason to step back and evaluate your own financial resilience. Ask the following questions. Is my operating loan growth tied to higher costs, increase in farm size, or am I carrying debt forward? If you're carrying debt forward, why are you carrying debt forward? Is it because you're having trouble paying principal payments? That would be a sign of financial stress. Another question, how strong is my working capital cushion relative to today's volatility? When you have a lot of volatility in the market, you need a higher current ratio to weather the storm. If margins tighten further, which costs of my farm can be adjusted, if any? Finally, could my operation absorb a poor year without a major disruption? One of the reasons why ag economists say that we need a current ratio above 2 to 1, it means that we can have 2 years in a row of fairly tight margins and still have some liquidity. And so we need to really pay attention to our working capital. These questions help determine whether your operation is positioned for resilience in a tighter margin environment. If you wanted to evaluate your farm's financial position and decision-making under tighter margins, we recommend watching our video, Thinking Like a CFO for Your Farm Operation. It walks through how to assess performance, risk, and financial resilience from a management perspective. For those who want to explore the data in more detail, you can also read our article, Rising Farm Debt and Financial Stress, Evidence from the Ag Economy Barometer. You'll find it along with additional farm management resources at purdue.edu/commercialag, where we break down these operating loan trends, the financial stress index, and balance sheet measures more fully.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So we're looking at January versus December of 25, and there's a seasonal shift there, right? A lot of folks have holiday events, maybe actually, you know, gatherings and so forth. It's much more prevalent in December than January. So keep that in mind in what I'm saying here. But retail demand for five of the eight categories was lower in January than it was December. And it was actually higher on food service items than the specific numbers in our report.
Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonser.
I'm not going to overreact to that because we've said that in the past at this point in time, again, for some seasonality. It's also not uncommon that even if you want to keep meat protein in your diet, you have this kind of broader, oh, crap, look at my credit card statement January 10th after the Christmas holiday. Folks in January, February tend to, like, you know, play catch up, so to speak, on paying down credit cards from the holiday effect. And we'd expect that to have kind of a broader, you know, financial impact on the meat demand sector. And that's worth watching, but I'm cautiously optimistic that particular force will be short term or mitigate. And maybe it's already mitigated here early in February.
But what about consumers and their pocketbook?
18% of the public say their household finances were better than they were January of 25. About 48% said they're the same. And that leaves the remaining basically third, 35%, saying they've gotten worse. I always interject here, no matter what media outlet I'm talking about, I wish it was more than 18% saying they're doing better. But that's a number that's kind of on par with what we've had for several months. What's really important, and we highlight this in the January report, is if you tell me your finances are better than a year ago, you're way more likely to have included beef as well as either pork, chicken, or other proteins in your meals yesterday. If you tell me things are getting worse, you're way more likely to say, no, I skipped meat protein. And that's because meat isn't the cheapest item, right? So there's this financial connection. But to go further with that, not just in your meals, where? So you're way less likely to go out to restaurants if your finances are deteriorating. The away-from-home food spending in particular is higher if you tell me your finances are improving. Now, to bring that specific to beef for a moment, you know, think white tablecloth steak demand, right, is directly tied to this. Ground beef through the retail versus ground beef through restaurants may not be quite as tied. So there's a cut-level distinction to that narrative. You and I have talked several times about the K-shaped economy, you know, kind of the differences in spending between those that are doing better versus not. That's really what we're alluding to here, but just some meat-specific examples of it.
And producers fund this.
Shout out to Beef and Pork Checkoff for funding this project. We're now 6 years into this, and actually just today was the latest big report was posted. And when I say big report, it's not for the faint-hearted, but it is picture heavy. We just put out a summary of all the trends and kind of main takeaways, if you like, from February 2020, which is the first month we collected data, through December of 25. So it's over 190,000 respondents during that period. It's a very dense data set at this point. Again, shout out to the checkoff programs. Shout out to you and all the other media partners that have helped roll this out. And if that kind of information is of use to you, I hope folks go to agmanager.info. We did do our best to put it in picture form so you can see the visual trends. Not everybody wants to live in a coding and equation world like yours truly here. Not that I want to. It's kind of my job. But the thing I would probably most impress on us here is 2026, like at the end of that period, how we started this year. So, sir, you know, merge all my comments today. Meat is still in. We actually find a decline in the vegan vegetarian rates and an increase in the self-declared I'm a meat consumer kind of diet. And we see retail demand leading over food service demand. We see lots of evidence of that. Financial concerns I talked about earlier, but those that say things are getting better are disproportionately making up for it on the spending front. So if you put a bow on a lot of things, and I'm just like teasing it up a little bit to pull up the report, is meat is having more than a moment. 2025, I use the phrase meat is having a moment. That was accurate, but that moment is now multi-months in the making at this point. So it's more than a short-term moment. And it's in, and I think it's the protein demand that's the broader trend, like nationwide, and meat is part of that. And you'll see several examples of that when you look through our summary report.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.